organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
She's crafty. She gets around. She's crafty.
She's always down.
She's crafty.
She's got it great.
She's crafty. And she's just my type.
8 minutes after the hour of 5. This should be the theme song anytime we talk about Hillary Rodham Clinton by the Beastie Boys. She's crafty. But as I take you home, just want to hit on 2 points before we get to our guest. Number one, if you'd like to see the Guardian Angel documentary about my life and times from 1979 to 1992, 13 years in which it was a baptism in fire. You get one last chance to see it at the Doc Film Festival. This is the largest documentary film festival in America. It will play tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. The movie starts at 2:45. You have to be at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue at West 3rd Street. The IFC Center on 6th Avenue at West 3rd Street. I will intro it and then do the Q&A afterwards and then run back here ready to do the drive home at 5. And then also start keeping a calendar. Justin B. Love, our producer, hipster millennial who I so hate and loathe, invader from Alabama. The same way that someone waiting for their parole hearing or a cop waiting to go out on retirement, you know, 20 years, half pay, a full boat of benefits till the day I die. 30 days from this point forward to my operation December 13th to remove half my stomach. I'll end up with a colostomy bag again, with a morphine pump as a result of having full-blown Crohn's disease. But don't worry about it. I've taken lickings before and come back ticking. But, oh, I was getting such knockers earlier today when I was looking at the old gray lady above the fold in New York Times. U.S. to consider special counsel and uranium deal. Clinton in crosshairs. Fear the Justice Department is being used to attack presidential rivals. And on the line to discuss it, Christopher Hahn, the liberal heartthrob of so many thousands and the punching bag for those commentators on Fox News. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Chris.
It's great to be here. Who's playing you in the movie, Jonah Hill?
No, this is actually a documentary, so guess what? It's me for 80 minutes, my own voice, my own ufacha. So you're used to seeing me here when you substitute at WABC. Now you get 80 to 88 minutes of me live, unfettered, uninterrupted, with no live reads and no commercials.
I will have to see that movie. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, so I want to play you a cut. Earlier today, Jeff Sessions up on the Hill, as he was being grilled by the Republican Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio about the Justice Department possibly seeking to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Hillary Rodham Clinton's role as Secretary of State in the Obama administration in that uranium deal.
Doesn't that warrant, in addition to all the things we know about James Comey in 2016, doesn't that warrant naming a second special counsel, as 20 members of this committee wrote you 3.5 months ago asking you to do?
Mr. Comey is no longer the director of the FBI.
Thank goodness.
We have an excellent man of integrity and ability in Chris Wray, and I think he's going to do an outstanding job, and I'm very happy
about
that.
He's not here today, Attorney General.
And I would say,
I'm asking for a special counsel.
The time of the gentleman.
And I would say, looks like is not enough basis to appoint a special counsel.
Oh, shucks. Bull feathers. Come on, Chris. You wanted fairness here. You wanted the special prosecutor Mueller to investigate Trump collusion during the campaign and obviously Hillary's role in making that scuttle and kickbacks for the uranium deal, didn't you?
A Trump appointee decided that in the interest of justice, they would appoint a special prosecutor to avoid the appearance of impropriety when investigating Trump. What they are doing right now, what the Republicans, what the banana Republicans are doing right now, is engaging in whataboutism, which is a Soviet-era tactic to try to distract from the real problem that is the Trump administration really running roughshod over Americans' institutions. But I got news for you, Curtis, and anybody else who's listening. The institutions are stronger than Trump, And ultimately, it's the very institutions that the president and his cohorts in Congress are attacking that will bring them down in the end.
You don't even want an investigation into these allegations about Hillary's role in the sale of the uranium, the kickback to the Clinton Foundation, and the speaking engagement that Bill got for $500,000 in rubles as a result of that deal?
In the United States of America, politically, challenging your opponents with criminal prosecution is just unheard of. And that's only what this is. And the only reason we're talking about this right now is that the Mueller investigation is heating up, and the Republican Party, not all of them, but many of them, and the President of the United States are engaging in whataboutism, just like the comrades in the Soviet Union, just like Putin would do to justify their many misdeeds. And it is disgusting. And the American people will have none of it. And the Congress should stand up to these idiots that are out there kind of promoting this right now in the Congress.
But, Kirstenville,
I'm happy that Jeff Sessions said that there's no need for it. I'm happy that he actually said that. I know that the president disagrees. They just want to start a fire over nothing.
Yeah, you know something. Jeff Sessions has had a lot of memory losses of late. He may be suffering the first wave of dementia. But how about on the dossier that the Republicans first started when Trump was running for the presidency? They wanted to derail his candidacy. Then obviously he gets the nomination in Cleveland. They decide, okay, we're not paying for that anymore. And then all of a sudden, Hillary, Podesta, the DNC pick it up, pay a lot of money for it. Don't you want that investigated? Isn't that collusion with foreign governments in a presidential campaign?
I think that Mueller has the option to investigate that fully, and I think that he is. It seems to me that there's been a lot of talk about the dossier, and every time we talk about it, it seems that more and more of the stuff that's in it has been proven true. But Mueller has the purview to investigate all forms of Russia collusion in the election, and he should.
Now, Chris Vahan, you don't believe the allegation of the former British spy that Trump, when he went to the Miss World contest in Moscow and was housed at a 5-star top-shelf hotel, had prostitutes in his room in which he requested a golden shower of them? You don't believe that, Christopher.
That's the only one anybody ever talks about, but there are all sorts of issues about the Trump financing of his empire that are in that dossier. I don't know what we're going to find out about that, the sexual impropriety that the president may or may not have had in Russia. I don't know what we'll find out. Probably I don't believe that. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of things in there that, are starting to be proven true. And the WikiLeaks connection to the Trump campaign, which is definitely clear as day now that Donald Trump Jr. even released his email showing that he was colluding with WikiLeaks, which the president's own CIA director, President Trump's CIA director, has said was an agent of the Russian government. He colluded with them. He attempted to collude with them. He worked with them. He promoted their links. There is clear evidence there. If this was Hillary Clinton, if Hillary Clinton was president right now and we had an email from Chelsea, how quickly would Jeff Sessions and all these yucks in Congress be saying, lock her up?
You know something? I just was thinking of memory nourishment for our attorney general, who seems to be at the first level of dementia. But your hero, Bill Clinton, was great at that because he would constantly approach his staff during the Monica Lewinsky investigation and want to nourish their memory about the facts, at least to tilt it his way. Today was a classic example of how Jeff Sessions' memory got nourished by TV news.
Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting. After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter. But I did not recall this event, which occurred 18 months before my testimony of a few weeks ago, and I would gladly have reported it had I remembered it, because I pushed back against his suggestion that I thought may have been improper.
Are you satisfied, Christopher Hahn, with his explanation for his many bouts of lost memory?
You know what? This reminds me of, this is the redneck version of Godfather 2, the congressional hearing. Nobody remembers anything. somebody's going to walk in the room and remind them of everything. I think that somebody's going to be Michael Flynn, who's probably cutting his deal right now to avoid going to jail for the rest of his life.
And I guess Judge Roy Moore, it's like a scene out of My Cousin Vinny, right?
Judge Moore is a scene out of something I don't even want to talk about. This guy's a disgrace. And anybody who stands next to him and is working with him, and evangelical Christians who are supporting him, should be ashamed of themselves. This guy is—it's got to go. You know what? I don't know if he'd be found guilty in a court of law, but we right now have to deal with an election, and I don't think this is a guy you want representing you in the Senate. I didn't think he was a guy you wanted representing you in the Senate before this because of some of his views on gays and others. But this just, you know, takes the cake for me.
Well, we'll have to be listening intently to Mark Levin again, 6-9. He is staunchly, from his bunker, defended Judge Roy Moore, even last night after the allegations of a fifth woman. We'll see if his temperature has changed any in the course of the last 24 hours.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the Drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
Feel like doing the sun dance here, you know. Pop out my feathers. And then suddenly pray to the great spirit in the sky. Well, it's interesting because it's a segue here on the Drive Home at 5 to a man who has decided enough is enough. You remember a few months ago, Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, talked about the grand opening of the new Tappan Zee Bridge after months of redeveloping the bridge in a new form to replace the old form. But he slipped everyone a Mickey. He hadn't mentioned anything prior to that day when he said, oh, by the way, it won't be called the Tappan Zee Bridge any longer. It'll be named after my father, Mario. That's right, the Mario Cuomo Bridge. But Monroe Mann, a Port Chester resident, has decided no. So he's gone through an online petition process to rename the Mario Cuomo Bridge. And he joins us here today at the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board, Monroe.
It's a pleasure to be here, Curtis. Thank you.
I understand you are a solid Michael Savage listener here at WABC.
Oh, I love all you guys. Levin, Savage, Lewin, fantastic. And
good.
I love what you did with the Guardian Angels. I can't believe it's still going today. So you're
an
inspiration.
Well, appreciate that, Monroe. But what was your inspiration and motivation to start this online petition to rename the Mario Cuomo Bridge?
It was just a shock to me that after 3-4 years of them touting the new Tappan Zee Bridge, everyone was so excited about it. And as you just said earlier, he slipped us a Mickey. And they did it in a really horrible way without any public input. And they're now tearing the history away from New York and, most importantly, the Indians and the Dutch for whom the Tappan Zee Bridge is named. And I think it's a travesty because it's happening too much in this country that history is getting thrown to the side for political reasons, and I don't like it.
Yeah, well, some would say, Monroe Mann, you know, there was a subtitle to the renaming of the bridge, Tappan Zee Bridge. Then it had a facelift, and it was renamed the Malcolm Wilson Bridge after a former governor, a person of no consequence, but nobody knew that. But is this political? I mean, did you vote against Andrew Cuomo, or were you old enough to vote at the time that Mario Cuomo was running for governor?
No, honestly, I don't even know Mario Cuomo from anybody. I don't know if he was great. I don't know if he was horrible. And honestly, I don't even want to talk about him because he is not the subject of this as far as we and I am concerned. It's about recognizing the Tappan Indians and the Dutch. And it was part of the big, ugly bill, as you may know. And it was tacked on to the end of a 71-page bill. And none of these legislators had any choice. If they wanted to pass the rest, they had to rename this bridge after somebody who honestly is not deserving of it. Certainly not as much as the Indians and the Dutch. And to think that any politician, Reagan, Trump, I don't care who it is, Giuliani, none of them trump the Tappan Zee name. And that's what we want back. You said about the pre-pending before it was the Wilson Tappan Zee Bridge. Honestly, if they want to make a compromise, fine. It should be called the Cuomo-Wilson-Tappan Zee Bridge, or at very minimum, the Cuomo-Tappan Zee Bridge, so we don't waste more taxpayer money on renaming all of those signs.
All right, but Monroe Man, what do you hope that this online petition will do? You have how many names to date, and obviously many more are going to be signing up.
Sure. I just checked right before the interview. We're up to 55,000 now, and it is showing no signs of slowing. One thing that I'm kind of upset with all the media is a lot of the media are getting this whole wrong. Like, I just saw the New York Post, and I appreciate them putting this on the cover of today's New York Post, but they are making it seem like we want to remove the name Mario Cuomo from the Tappan Zee Bridge, when they're not really telling the truth. The Tappan Zee Bridge has already been removed. It is legally now the Governor Mario Cuomo Bridge. So we're not saying, hey, can we just remove the Cuomo name? I don't care. Keep the Cuomo name on for all I care. None of us really care about that. We want to represent the Tappan Indians in the Z, the Dutch. And I think that's the problem. A lot of the media is not actually telling people the truth about this. And this is why the governor and their spokesman are trying to make this partisan and political, because now everybody thinks, oh, well, why does he want to remove the Mario Cuomo name? We don't. Leave it on there, but put Tappan Zee back just as it was the Malcolm Wilson Tappan Zee Bridge.
All right, well,
I think that's a fair compromise.
Monroe Man, how can somebody go online and sign your petition and eyeball it?
Just go to the website change.org, which is a wonderful organization that's allowed this to happen, and just type in the words Tappan Zee, and it'll be the petition will be right there, and you can just say, add your name to it. You can write a comment, and I think your listeners would be a great help and if they feel strongly about this, and also feel strongly about this happening everywhere across the nation, not just here in Westchester, Rockland County. This is something that I think should change. No bridges, tunnels, structures, buildings that are paid for with public money should be named after anyone who has not been dead for 50 years. That's number one. And number two, we need to pass a bill that makes sure that none of these namings or renamings happen in legislatures. It happens as a direct referendum. And one of my next efforts, if this fails, if the legislature and the governor do not come to their senses, is I'm going to start figuring out how to turn New York State into a referendum state.
All right. Do appreciate that, Monroe. People can go online to change.org in order to sign up that petition or check it out. And Ken Duffy, interesting.
Yes.
In the words of my mentor, who used to sit at this microphone, who was the king of talk radio, Bob Grant, Mario, ascendeme, tu si provino sfacim.
Translation?
And he was. Well, sfacim, many meanings. Some, let's just say I couldn't describe it on the air. But others, it's dependent on the dialect.
Right.
You know, I grew up with Bades. Others grew up with Calabrese, Napolitano, Siciliano. But, hey, Mario, ascendeme, tu si u proviono sfacim. And he is.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa.
On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa, live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa.
Local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
I just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate another day of life.
5:40 as we continue on the Drive home at 5. And as I told you all, I'm checking off the calendar as if I'm waiting for my parole hearing or retirement as a flatfoot cop. You know, get my 20 years in, then my pension and my benefits, full boat of benefits for the rest of my life. I've got 30 days to my very intense, complicated operation to remove part of my stomach, in which I end up with a colostomy bag again and out of the morphine pump because of Crohn's disease. But I'm 63. Imagine if you're 90s and you're having complicated or serious surgery. And that's exactly what happened with Bill Ervolino's father, Bill, columnist for The Record in New Jersey. Thanks for jumping on board again here at the Drive Home at 5, Bill.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I've had much better days. Much better days. But, you know, years ago, they used to say, a doctor would say, hey, you pass 75, 80, we're not going to do operations. Tough noogies. You know, say a prayer and meet your master. Your dad got an operation in his 90s?
91. Well, you know, it's funny you put it that way, because I remember when my brother and I are 3 years apart, and my father said that, you know, we didn't have any more because my mother was 30. And then, you know, in those days, how could you have a baby after 30? I mean, it was like it was too dangerous. And now this is like one of those, well, he had the gallbladder out, so it's not that serious. It's kind of like you could do it at the drive-up window. But they had a, like a laparoscopic thing. They make an incision. They suck it out, you know. And then they sell it to the like the sushi place or something. I don't know what happens to it, but anyway.
Well, so they didn't do an incision, huh? They didn't
no,
do
they
it.
Do, they do these when you're done because I saw the what was left. It was like three little dots. But you know there are complications, and he did have complications because of scar tissue from previous things that he had done, and then you know then they want to get rid of you so fast. He went in Monday, Wednesday they want him to go home, and he's like he's not feeling well. Anyway, he comes home. Fortunately, his aide, he has an aide with him, and she's like, he's burning up. And it turns out he had pneumonia. They sent him home with pneumonia. So we had to take him back to the hospital, rushing him there because he really was, like, burning up. And now he's been there ever since last Thursday. And they want him there for 7 days because of the IV antibiotics. They don't want to give him pills. He's got to stay in the hospital. So, you know, it's... And then nobody tells you, when is he going home? We don't know yet. Yeah, who do I ask? You know, the doctor's not here. When is he coming in? We don't know. What is this? I mean, you know.
Yeah, but it's interesting because they do. They want to rush you in and rush you out and get that bed ready for another patient that they can either milk the Medicare, Medicaid, or their personal insurance for. So your dad was kept at 91. They kept him how many days?
They kept him first. They did the operation last Monday on the gallbladder.
Right.
They were talking about him going home the next morning, but he wasn't feeling good. But Wednesday, they're like, go home. You're fine. And he was complaining he didn't feel good. So then Thursday, he goes back. This is now pneumonia they diagnose him with. And he's been in since last Thursday. And they want to keep him at least till this Thursday. 7 days on an IV. And I can't even get the doctor. Where's it? And then you get the doctor. Well, we have to go with the infectious disease specialist. And it's like I don't know. Like he's got Legionnaire's disease, and he's going to unleash it on the world. If he's got to be there, fine. But I would like to talk to somebody. And it's very hard. You know, there's just like they come in the morning, they leave, they run out the back door. I don't know where they are.
Yeah, and you can't call them directly. You have to go through the calling system, in which you have to punch in like 52,000 numbers just to get their assistant.
Yeah, well, the girls on the nurses, rather, and the whatever they are, they walk around with these. They got these things they're called WOWs. They have like a computer on wheels. It's called Work on Wheels or Workplace on Wheels. And they're wheeling these things all over the place. And then they have to call the doctor, leave a message. He calls her back, doesn't call you. And it's like playing telephone. Uh-huh. And, you know, and God forbid you look at your father's chart on the computer. They just start screaming.
Oh, they freak. They freak.
God, no, this is not, you're not allowed to see this. That's like, it's my father.
And they don't want you to take a picture. God forbid you whip out your celly or smartphone and want to take a picture. No, it's sort of like a nuclear waste facility.
It's ridiculous. And then further complicating things, you know, we found an aide for him that's with him, stays over with him and so on. And she's great. She's the Ukrainian lady. She yells at him, he yells at her. But she was leaving. She had planned to go see her mother in Ukraine on Friday. So he went back in the hospital Thursday. She left on Friday. We have to get another poor woman who's not used to him.
Oh,
and so they're yelling and screaming.
I have a feeling, knowing you, Bill Ervolino, your father's a real curmudgeon and contrarian and a real Weisenheimer and out the cock of the boot.
Yeah, please. He's really impossible, and he's just... You know, and he doesn't know where, after a few days in the hospital, between the fact that he's legally blind, the fact that he's sleeping, he's in an unfamiliar place, and they're giving him meds, and every time he wakes up, he's like, oh, they trashed my house, they took me in the woods, I'm like, who are you, you know, he has a dream, and he doesn't know where he is, and so we have to, then he sits up, and he's fine again, he gets himself, oriented. But
now,
he wakes up, he's disoriented, he's crazy, he's yelling at everybody. It's amazing.
I don't know, but it's amazing. At 91, he could still be alive and kicking and have that kind of attitude. But the truth of somebody's recovery or lack of recovery is when he figured out where his goiter was and gallbladder, and that was all, sort of straightened out, did he eat food?
He's been eating. He first came out of it Tuesday, last week. He's, oh, I'm dying. I'm never going to... Then, like, 3 hours later, he had turkey, mashed potatoes, soup, Jell-O. He had a rice pudding. I'm like, oh, my God, he's really putting it away. I said, I don't think you're dying. I'm going to cancel the flowers now. But, you know, and he has a good appetite. And so no matter what, he comes out of it and he's like, get me some... He wants everything. He actually likes... I don't think it's a great hospital, but they have good food there. So, you know, it's kind of a...
Well, that's an unusual thing, to find a hospital with good food. Finally, when you were watching your dad in bed at the age of 91, did you see yourself? Because I know when my dad was in that situation, I saw myself. I said, man, I hope I don't act like my dad does, belligerent, you know, an obstructionist, wanting to hit the attendants, the male attendants. I hope I don't act out like he does.
No, you know, it's actually, it makes me sad in a way, because he doesn't appreciate that he's got two sons that are taking turns running back and forth, that he's got a full-time aide, a granddaughter, and you know, I don't have kids. I'm going to be laying there. People are going to, they'll probably just, like, throw me in the back closet somewhere. So I think about that, and I do think about people that are in there with nobody to help them. But, when you're in there, you know, you're just going to get yelled at and abused and everything else, and it's just part of the... It's part of the thing. He's my dad, so I'm there.
You're a double mensch. A double mensch for being there with your dad, who at the age of 91, Bill Ervolino of The Record, and you got to check out his columns on The Record. You can go online. It's so great. NorthJersey.com. A whole series of them. But this is really close to what I'm going to be going through on December 13th when I have half of my stomach taken out. And I don't think anybody's going to want to come in the hospital room. In fact, I know Brian Mongolucci, our hipster millennial board operator, and this invader from Alabama, Justin B. Love, the hipster and millennial that I love, you won't be coming there because you're afraid that I want to knock you out. And I'm going to be like rip-roaring mad until I get that colostomy bag out, that IV out of my arm, and I'm back after taking a licking, and I come back ticking.
Connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
And like a high with my baby. I just love the mall, I'm getting fly with my baby.
This degenerate hip-hop monster, Fetty Wap. Synonymous with Patterson. Up the hill, down the hill. Hey, do me a solid, Fetty Wap. Stay the hell out of Brooklyn where you got busted for a drunken driving charge just over the weekend. But we're not talking about Fetty Wap. We're talking about this disgrazia, this shanda, this hazari, this pig. Jose Joey Torres, the former mayor of Paterson, New Jersey, who is there in Hudson County Criminal Court to get sentenced to 5 years in prison. Now, what did he get 5 years for? I'd have given him 25 years, if not more, for all the money he was responsible for extorting and shaking down in a city that's in need of every nickel, dime, and penny it can get. But he had previously admitted that he directed three public works employees to do renovations at a beer warehouse owned by the mayor's family. And he gave them time on the clock, city hall time. And that's how they were compensated and paid at taxpayers' expense. So he's before the judge, and the judge is saying 5 years, although he gave him an out. Oh, this judge, oh, he should be ashamed of himself because he did not set a minimum amount of prison time for Torres. And immediately Torres's lawyers said he would apply for a supervised release program within 6 months. You know what that means? 6 months in a state penitentiary. And it won't be like Rahway or Trenton State, which it should be. It'll be, you know, a minimum security facility, a sort of camp-fed facility. And then he'd be able to be under home incarceration with a little bracelet around his ankle. But when he came before the judge, Jose, tough guy, Joey Torres, was crying like a little baby. His family was crying like babies as they sat in the first two pews. He said, I proudly served the state of New Jersey and the city of Paterson in one capacity or another for over 30 years. Yeah, you were ripping off the taxpayers. You were running the double dutch on them. And then all of a sudden, Torres stopped speaking several times and he fought back the tears as he just started just crying. He's wailing, I'm sorry. I embarrassed my family and friends. Hey, what about saying you're sorry to the people of Patterson, to Passaic County, to the state of New Jersey? You ripped off the taxpayers, and he kept wailing, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Notice these tough guys, right? Remember Anthony the Weiner Wiener, the perv? Remember how he'd get into the floor of the house, and he was all belligerent and puffing out his chest like he was a tough guy? And for many years, I would see Jose Joey Torres acting like a tough guy at town hall meetings and when he'd be lecturing city council. And then all of a sudden, these tough guys, when they're there to get their due, their sentence, they cry like little babies because they felt they were entitled. Anthony the Weiner Wiener to being a pervert to all. And then Joey Jose Torres to ripping off the taxpayers and having taxpayers pay for the fixing up of his house and his family businesses. You are a hazara. You are a pig, Joey Jose Torres.